This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we remember Hall of Fame inductee Violet Hopkins. Dr. Laura Werner begins a two-part series on equine emergencies, and we begin with Sarah Geike from Lebanon, Connecticut, who returns with our judge's tip this week. Sarah is a USEF S judge, an FEI four-star judge, a USDF certified instructor through fourth level, an instructor certification examiner, a current member of the USDF Instructor Trainer Committee and the Freestyle Committee, and has served on the USDF Judges Committee. Hi, Sarah. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be here. My purpose of this talk was to somehow convey to the listeners a tip from the judge's point of view. And I thought about it, and then I really came to the realization that there is one very important tip that I really would like to discuss. And this is it. I know from my own riding experience and all my students and all of the people all over the world that I judge in horse shows is we see something very similar happen to riders. And that is that in their initial horse show experience, as they're learning how to best present themselves in the horse in the show, in a horse show, everybody goes through a process where they just ride the test as compared to raw horse. And so that's really what I would like to talk a little bit about. Everybody goes through this period. It's normal. Some stay in it forever. Others learn and grow out of it. And what I really mean when I'm referring to this is, for instance, I've seen people that are on nice horses, they have nice positions, they go in and they ride, and it's very clear that they're just getting from point A to point B in terms of the test. They're just going through the movements and trying to ride the movements as correctly as they can. And that is all well and good. However, it is not really the purpose of the dressage test, and it is not what the judges are looking for. So I'd first like to talk about our goal for riding a successful test. Our goal is really to be able to go to a horse show and to be able to have the rider, ourselves, and our horse perform at the same and ride at the same level that we do at home, both when we warm up and we go through the test. Now, that's very difficult, as we all know, because at a horse show, there are so many external factors that affect our performance. But that's our goal. So in order to accomplish that, and we think of why we want to accomplish that, and it's really quite simple because every time we go in the horse show arena, we're really training our horse. And if we just go through the motions and ride the test pattern, we're teaching our horse to go a little bit as a robot without its natural expression and brilliance and suppleness and balance and all of the things that we want to show off to the judge and show off to people. So at home, every ride, we're training the horse for something. And our goal is to train him at the horse show to be relaxed, to be confident, to be supple, and to be balanced, and to really be 100% with us and on our aid. That's our goal. All right, so then let's backtrack. And I think it'd be very helpful for the readers to understand what the judge's perspective is. What are we looking for? And many riders believe that the judges are nitpicking about this and about that and too much angle and not enough bend and all of these little details. And yes, we're looking for the details, but much more importantly, across the board from training level to Grand Prix, what we're looking for is correct riding and correct training. And that will give us quality. Quality in the work and quality in the development of the horse's gaits, which, after all, that's the name of the game. That's our end result that we're looking for. And when I say quality, it doesn't mean you have to have a horse with 9 gates and tremendous extensions. They have to be adequate gates. He has to have freedom and elasticity. So from the judge's point of view, from our eyes, we're looking to see that things are correct. Okay, and our guideline, as I'm sure everybody knows, is the scale of training, rhythm, suppleness, connection, impulsion, straightness, and collection. So every movement at every level, we're making a very quick assessment. Does the horse look, for example, like a training level horse? Does it look like a Grand Prix horse? Is it in the proper balance? Does it have the proper engagement? Does it have sufficient impulsion? Is it swinging through the back? We are very quickly going through all of this criteria as the horse performs the movement. The first thing I'd suggest to listeners is that they take a step back and they think more about riding for quality rather than just doing the movements. The second thing I would suggest is to take a moment and whatever level you're showing is look on the front of your test sheet, and it has the criteria. It has what's expected. It has what we're looking for at that particular level. Okay, and so it's in black and white, as are the directive ideas on the actual dressage test. So it gives you a tremendous amount of really good information to help you develop your horse. All right, so it is kind of a double-edged sword, though, in that, yes, we have to show proper figures and we have to show proper corners. I know last time I spoke about corners, and they are important. And it is important to be able to ride a correct 20-meter circle and to make correct figures and have your horse do a lengthening. However, the double-edged sword is that the more the rider focuses on the basics in his mind and in his primary focus, all right, the easier the exercises become to maneuver and to ride. And to keep in mind that the exercises and all of the movements in the test are really designed as just that, exercises to improve the basic gaits of the horse by improving engagement, balance, suppleness, and connection. But the exercises aren't an end to themselves. We don't do shoulder in just through shoulder in. All right, the shoulder in ridden with quality gaits, a quality trot, for example, improves the engagement and the collection and the balance of the horse. So it's important to understand that we as judges, the meanies at sea, that's what we're looking for. And it is very, very evident when we watch riders and we watch horses when the riding is correct and when the training is correct. Even on average horses, we will reward that. Correct riding and training combined with accurate figures can give you a very high mark. So that brings us to really the next thing I would like to encourage riders to do. And I feel that this is a very hard step for riders to overcome in their development. That step being to be able to go to a horse show when they're nervous, under pressure, and to really focus on riding the horse number one and the test number two. So this involves a lot of mental training for the rider. And as we all know, this is such a huge aspect of being a successful rider and trainer. So at a horse show, my first advice is for riders to begin to be able to ride as I'm describing in the test. The first thing you need to do is focus on what you want to happen rather than focus on what you do not want to happen. All right, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it is so true. Focus on what you want, okay? And be very careful of that little inner voice, that negative inner voice that can creep up and be the analytical part of you and start to take away where you begin to think of, oh, this is wrong and that is wrong, or I did this wrong. Do not go down that road. So you must mentally train yourself to focus on what you want to happen, and then that has to be channeled into the moment so that whatever you're riding at the moment, that's what you focus on. The second part of the mental training involves really training yourself to learn to think in terms of the training scale as you ride. And I like to, I train my riders to do this in kind of an abridged version. So to think, for example, every figure, every exercise you ride in the horse show ring or at home, just quickly go through rhythm and energy, suppleness and balance, engagement and self-carriage, so that you break it into three basic areas and you make an assessment of yourself. Think of the rhythm, think of the energy, think of the balance and the suppleness. So every movement and exercise you ride, you're focused only on that. Okay? Now, mistakes happen. And if the training and riding is good and it's correct, a little whoopsie mistake, a little hiccup, yes, you might not get a great score for that, but it's not going to penalize you in the long run. It's only one mark. If you make a mistake and maybe it's a 3 or 4, go on. Forget about it. It's over. You can't change it. All right? And ride, keep riding and keep focusing, as I just outlined, on the next movement. And ridden well, you could easily go from the poor mark of a 4 to a high mark of a 9 or 10. That is absolutely possible. So to keep your focus in this way, you have to, in a lot of ways, you have to have tunnel vision on what you want to happen and what your focus and attention is going to be on. So that is essentially what I wanted to impart to listeners today, that you have the ability to really take an average test, and by changing your thinking and your focus of how you are performing at a horse show, you can gain yourself many, many more points. And it is, as you begin to incorporate this, you will see how powerful and how effective it can be when your horse is really active and he's really straight and he's really on the aids and on your seat and in a very nice balance for his level, how much more control you have. How much more control you then have on the center line to keep them straight, on circles to make them even and to make them correctly placed. It goes a long way. So that's my tip for today, Chris.
Well, thank you, Sarah. The power of positive thinking and keeping that checklist front and center, it has to become instinctive and intuitive, doesn't it?
It really does, and we all go through that, and it's a learned thing. I don't know of any rider that was born with that could get on a horse and just go in the ring and bingo, pull it off. It's training, and it's making mistakes. And that's another thing that's really important is give yourself the freedom to make a mistake in the horse show ring. That's fine. Everybody does. Mistakes are an opportunity to learn and to figure things out and to sort it out so that you can become better the next time.
Well, thank you very much indeed for that, Sarah. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Chris. You have a terrific show. Lots of really, really good information. I listen to it myself, so I'm enjoying it.
And now for the first part in our two-part series on equine emergencies with Dr. Laura Werner. This segment was taken from the 2013 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. Dr. Laura Werner is a member of the surgical team of Davidson Surgery Center at Haggard Equine Medical Institute in Lexington, Kentucky.
Today we're going to speak about colic and other emergencies in the horse. And just a couple of the goals today are to recognize when there is a problem. So we're going to go over some basic physical exam findings. So when we know, we can recognize whether something's normal or abnormal in the horse, and then what to do about it. So first of all, obviously, my important thing is try to stay calm. I think everyone, the best you can remain calm and kind of help your veterinarian or the others around you will actually help the horse in the long run as well, too, and our job as well. Try to be prepared. So we'll talk about some things to have on hand for emergencies, especially if you are a barn owner or trainer where you have a lot of horses in your care. I think one of the most important things is having access to a trailer. A lot of times, people don't have a range to have their own trailer, and so they'd have to wait and scramble to find a friend that could haul them, and that can waste a lot of valuable time. So, if you don't own your own trailer, try to have something pre-arranged with a friend that you can borrow or have a friend that will haul your horse. And again, I think boarders and trainers, especially when you have a lot of horses at your facility, try to discuss treatment options or any financial limits with your owners or boarders. Obtain any permission for treatment if they're unavailable, as emergencies always seem to occur with horses when either the owner or someone else associated with the horse is out of town. It's happened to me too. So they just seem to have an evident sense to know when to get in trouble. And obviously have every horse at your facility have their insurance information available, obviously before the need arises. So just we're going to go over a few normals. The normal rectal temperature on a horse is 99 to 101 degrees. So foals, generally up to about 6 months of age, can range from about 101.5 to 102 degrees, and that's normal for them. But an adult anywhere above 101 is considered abnormal, and that's indication of some sort of inflammation or infection when you have an elevated temperature. When it's below 98 degrees, obviously if we have extreme cold, it can get temperature low, but obviously that can be also associated if the horse is in severe shock, or sometimes if they've had recent bute or Bantamine administration. The only other time the horse's temp can be that low as well too is sometimes if they've just defecated right beforehand and they have some air in their rectum. Obviously, it's a good idea to have on hand any of those digital thermometers. They're great. Some of them are fast. I think they'll take the temperature within 8 seconds. Just need to make sure that they're pushed in fully because they're more meant for humans, but they still work really well on our equine patients. And then usually at the drugstore, you can purchase a really inexpensive stethoscope, and that's a useful item to have on hand too. So you can listen to the horse's pulse or heart rate, obviously. And if you don't have a stethoscope, you can use your hands most oftentimes enough, unless they're a very large horse, you can feel their heart rate over the left side of their chest, just right behind their elbow. And sometimes you have to tuck your hand even right behind their elbow to feel their heart or listen to it. You can also feel their pulse under their mandible. They've got a very large vessel there. You can feel another vessel for their pulse on the outside of the eye. And another great place to take the pulse is right over their sesamoids, and we often call that a digital pulse. So right over their sesamoids, right behind their fetlock, is a great place to feel their pulse as well. So the rate, adults are generally 30 to 40 beats per minute. Foals may be 80 to 100 beats per minute. So if the rate is increased, obviously, is it from excitement? A lot of times you'll listen to the horse's heart and you'll hear the heart rate just decrease within the first 10 to 15 seconds of you listening to it. A lot of times they're just like us. They don't like a cold stethoscope placed on them, or they're a little frightened with what a veterinarian is going to do, or like I said, they just associate that with a little bit of something excitement. Or is it increased because of pain or shock? And a lot of times, even most horses, if you listen to them right after where they've been exercising, again, the heart rate will decrease very quickly in a relatively fit horse. So then our other important parameter is our gastrointestinal sounds. And we generally listen to these over the right and left flank areas in the upper and lower quadrants of their abdomen. We call the sounds borborygmus. That's kind of our big word for the day. They should have regular sounds. So when you listen to their gut sounds, you should hear very regular sounds occurring every few seconds. On the right side, it may be a little slower, but again, should be regular gut sounds that you hear. And a lot of times, again, if you don't have a stethoscope, you can place your ear next to the horse's abdomen and listen for those sounds. The right side can be a little slower, but they should be present. And again, knowing what's normal with your horse and what's abnormal with your horse is always good to know. So you can practice doing it before you need to know, and that way you know what's normal for that your particular horse. So any absence of the gut sounds, or if they're hypermodal, is abnormal. So if you hear almost constant GI sounds, that can be abnormal as well. And so mucous membrane color, the gums are easiest to evaluate on the horse. And what you want to do is press your finger against the gums until you can see the gums around them blanch. And then you take away your finger and count how many seconds it takes to return to that color. And that's called capillary refill time. So in a normal horse, after the blanching, the color should return in less than 2 seconds. Another abnormal color is pale or white. And that obviously is indicative of either some sort of shock or blood loss in a horse. This is just important information to relay to your veterinarian. So the respiratory rate should be around 12 to 20 breaths per minute. again, you can listen to the, if you have a stethoscope, you can also just count the excursions of their flanks or chest. You can listen over their trachea on the bottom of their neck, or just feel over their nostrils to see if there's airflow coming from their nostrils. Again, the rate should be about 12 to 20 breaths per minute. If it's increased, oftentimes horses will have an increased respiratory rate with pain before they'll have an increased heart rate. The other thing, obviously, is excitement, or if they've just been exercising, if there's any increased effort. So does that horse look like it's struggling to breathe, or do you not feel air coming out of their nostrils? These are all abnormal signs. Now we're going on to colic. So what is colic? Colic is defined by abdominal pain, okay? It's not necessarily specific to the gastrointestinal system. We'll go over that in a minute. All colics should be considered emergencies, okay? And we spoke about determining basic physical parameters on your horse to help give this information to your veterinarian. The history and physical parameters that you determine are really valuable to help in the diagnosis and determine if your horse needs to be sent into a hospital or if it can be treated in the field. So this history, such as the age, breed of horse, any recent illness or injury, when it was recently dewormed, you got a new load of hay in, all this information is very valuable to help us diagnose your horse faster. So the signs of colic, everyone knows rolling. Also, obviously, pawing is a very common sign of colic. A lot of times these horses will stretch out and posture like they're going to urinate, and they may or may not urinate. Sometimes they can just show depression. Sometimes they can kick at their belly or turn or look at their flanks or bite their flanks. Also, sometimes you might find your horse and just find areas of self-mutilation, especially around the eyes or head where they have been rolling. And that's a sign. A lot of times, if you've not seen your horse overnight and find this in the morning, that's a sign that the horse may have exhibiting signs of colic overnight. Also, sweating and or muscle tremors or shaking. Horses are just like people. Everyone has a little bit different pain tolerance. And obviously, some of the conditions are more painful than others. So, like I said, some horses with the same condition can show a really wide variety of signs. Obviously, causes of colic. Most common thing that we think of is the gastrointestinal system or their intestines. Also, the urinary system. Sometimes just pain in the urinary system, whether it be a stone in the bladder, the urethra, can cause signs of colic. And also the reproductive tract, especially in the mare, signs associated with foaling or an abnormal foaling or other problems with the reproductive tract can also manifest themselves as colic. So again, all this information will help. Is the mare pregnant? Is it not pregnant? You know, any history of any recent breeding problems, these are all valuable information to your vet. So what can also look like colic but is not? Neurologic disease. Also horses that tie up, or obviously not as common in the dressage breeds, but in quarter horse breeds, or also some warm blood breeds, the muscle diseases or HYPP that some of these large breeds can get can also mimic colic. Also laminitis or founder as well can also look like colic. So again, when you talk about the history of your horse, it's really valuable. What's the breed of your horse? What is a gelding or a mare or a stallion? Is there certain types of colic associated with the different sexes and or sometimes breed of the horse, as well as age ranges? So there's certain types of colic we see in younger versus older horses that are fairly common. Were there any recent changes in management or feeding? Was there a new load of hay in or a different type of grain changed? These are all important factors. Any recent deworming. So especially in the young horse, a lot of times we'll have colic associated with deworming if the horse has a little bit larger burden of worms than we're aware of. Obviously, as well as important, has the horse had normal quantity and quality of feces that's normal for that horse in its stall? Or did you go in the stall and there wasn't anything in the stall this morning and the stall wasn't wet as normal? So like I said, it's good to know your horse, and because you know your horse better than your vet's going to know your horse. So does he normally have 6 piles in his stall, or does he normally have 2? Okay, so these are all important information to give to your veterinarian. And how long has it been going on? Okay. Has it been going on for the past few hours? Did he colic last week or last month? All these information is very valuable to us. So now what to do? Obviously, call your veterinarian. Then hopefully you've already done a brief physical on your horse and you can give all this valuable information and history, and that will help us if the horse is violent, go ahead and try to walk it. However, some walking will cure some types of colic, but obviously won't cure everything. If the horse is trying to roll, obviously don't get injured or hurt, but you can go ahead and try to walk the horse. If the horse is really violent and is still trying to go down, just put it in a safe stall until your veterinarian arrives. I would usually take away the hay and the feed on the horse too. Sometimes they might feel momentarily better and their first instinct is to try to eat or drink. And so it is often helpful to take the hay and water and feed away, okay? It's important to have a good relationship with your veterinarian. You know, in an emergency situation, obviously some of you will administer drugs, but I would have a good enough relationship with your veterinarian or someone that you can give medications under the direction of your veterinarian and not just give whatever you think needs to be done, because sometimes some of these drugs can mask a condition and it might be more serious than you think, and the horse has had a lot of sedation or something and we can't tell what's going on because the horse has been medicated. So again, have a good enough relationship with your veterinarian that if you're going to administer the medications that you do so under their direction. This is just my other thing, but do not give Banamine in the muscle. It's a very common drug that a lot of people will have on hand. It can cause a very severe and or fatal Clostridium infection in the muscle. If you have the injectable product and you can't give an intravenous injection, then give it to them orally. You can give the liquid orally, but don't ever give it in the muscle. This is a very common occurrence that we see. Okay. So when to think about referral. If your vet finds certain abnormalities that are consistent with a type of colic that is only amenable to surgery, if it's a stallion that's recently bred or has been exerting himself and has a scrotal hernia, or if, again, if we know that there's some recent history, the horse has been passing worms and is now showing signs of colic, these are all things that when your vet, you know, determines that this is something, I would go ahead and refer the horse immediately to, you know, your nearest treatment hospital. Obviously, if there's no response to treatment, if you give the horse medication and it either shows signs of colic again within an hour or so, or if the level, sometimes these horses are so painful that the treatment doesn't affect them at all. These are cases that, again, it's better off to send them into the hospital immediately. The other thing is if the horse has had recurrent episodes of colic, so whether or not it's colic 3 times in the past 2 weeks, it colics every month, these are things to think about referring the horse in for additional diagnosis and or treatment, again, or if there's a known problem, okay? So the consequences of delayed referral obviously can be very devastating or fatal. You know, sometimes, especially if your nearest hospital is several hours away, it's better off to be safe than sorry. So better off for your horse to go in, have a curative trailer ride, or stay overnight in a hospital. You know, the faster the horse is referred in, the generally the better the outcome.
Part 2 of Equine Emergencies will be featured on next week's episode. And finally this week, we continue our series of American dressage legends as we remember another USDF Hall of Fame inductee. Violet Hopkins was inducted into the USDF Hall of Fame in 1998 in recognition of her lifelong quest to improve the quality of dressage instruction and riding in the United States. She initiated and managed the Violet Hopkins Seminars for Dressage Instructors, which were conducted for 11 years at her Tristan Oaks farm. These seminars gave birth to the USDF Regional Workshops, the National Symposium, and the Instructor Certification Program. Ms. Hopkins has been the driving force to provide educational opportunities for grassroots instructors and riders. Violet spent her youth riding on her family's farm in Michigan. Preferring riding to piano practice, she always found a few horses to ride to school, and all her free moments were passed on horseback. With no formal instruction, Hopkins relied on her mounts to teach her the finer points of riding. At college, Hopkins studied to become a teacher. After graduation, she received her first real riding lessons from an old English master who taught her to jump. Hopkins saved enough money from her teaching paychecks to purchase her first horse, and then she began teaching riding professionally, initially at a public stable in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. 6 years later, she was offered the position of instructor at the Bloomfield Open Hunt Club, where she remained for 11 years. Always in search of educational opportunities, Hopkins sent out letters of inquiry to notable dressage trainers. When she learned that Arthur Conyott was coming to the Midwest, she quickly arranged to study with Pop for a week. In the mid-1950s, while at the Bloomfield Open Hunt Club, Hopkins met Chuck Grant, who moved from Chicago to manage the facility. Although she never trained formally with Grant, Hopkins profited from their many discussions about dressage. Other mentors included Captain Vladimir Litau and Eric Bubble. She studied eventing as well as dressage. After deciding to pursue solely dressage, Hopkins traded her horse for a thoroughbred from a nearby farm. For the next 14 years, she would learn from Dark Warrior, with whom she ascended to the highest level of dressage. One of Hopkins' goals was to provide educational opportunities for dressage instructors. With that goal in mind, she established her own dressage school in Michigan in 1969. That same year, she helped to found the Midwest Dressage Association, the purpose of which, she once quipped, was to, quote, increase activity and liven up the long cold winters. Hopkins Tristan Oaks Farm served as the MDA headquarters for several years. A founding member of the U.S. Dressage Federation, Hopkins is perhaps best known for her USDF Violet Hopkins National Seminars for Dressage Instructors conducted at Tristan Oaks. The Hopkins seminars are the forerunner of several important USDF programs, most significantly the USDF Regional Workshops, the USDF National Dressage Symposium, and the USDF Instructor Certification Program. Hopkins helped bring dressage to the Midwest. Her efforts to develop a strong educational base for instructors did much to promote and enhance the sport of dressage. For more information about the USDF Roma Foundation Hall of Fame, please visit the website at usdf.org. This podcast is also available for download on iTunes. Visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.